is really cool and special. Please set aside, God, what I think I know about you, what I think I should be like, what I think about my alcoholism, about what the steps are and how they work, about how to be of service to you and to my brothers and sisters. God, please set aside everything that blocks me from you in this eternal moment moving forward. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Let me kind of start off. Did you have something you want to read?
I do. Okay. I want to recap real quick last night.
Okay.
I'm Derek. I'm an addict and alcoholic. One of the most important words in the recovery process for me is the word commitment. The hopelessness of my first step forces me into a position where I have to be committed to a process that grants me power and access to that power, because being powerless over crack cocaine and whiskey is it's unacceptable to me. I don't accept it. And from a place of not accepting it, I launch into a very deep commitment when it comes to this recovery process. And so out of 365 Tao, I'd like to read a meditation called Commitment. Maiden plucks folk tune on steel strings. Crickets chant like monks. I've walked into autumnal contentment, yet a young boy seeks guidance. One may be quite far along on the path, but if one meets a beginner who sincerely seeks guidance, then one should help without reservation. If such a beginner were to come to you, what would you say? This is what I said to someone today. The time of beginning is one of the most precious times of all. It can be very exciting and full of wonderful growth. The first thing to do is to make up your mind that you are going to go the distance. When I first began, I made a lifelong commitment. I determined that I would learn from my teacher for at least 7 years. Now it has been much longer than that, but the essential element is still the same, commitment. But commitment needs something else in order to be perpetuated. It needs discipline. This is the perseverance to keep on when things are tough. Adversity in life's way of testing and perfecting a person and a person's character. Without that, we would never develop character. Rice suffers when it is milled. Jade must suffer when it is polished. But what emerges is something special. If you want to be special, then you have to be able to stick to things even when they are difficult, even when you're uncomfortable, even when you're in some pain, even when you're in some suffering. Commitment and discipline. These are two of the most precious words of those who would seek the Spirit. So I think that's very fitting to where we are. And before we launch into Bill's story, I want to recap last night, then Brandon's going to read something for you. Now, if you're taking notes or you're interested in taking someone through this process and you want to use the big book as your guideline, we started last night with that preface, and the preface is very important because it tells you the basic text and how the AA recovery program is the first 164 pages. Who here knows what the AA message is? This is interesting. If you ever get a chance to be a GSR and you go to one of these area assemblies, or you go to MACI, you know, the Cocaine Anonymous Intergroup, I encourage you to raise your hand at one of your meetings and ask them what the message is. And I want to see how many different answers that you will get. Now, in the dust cover of the third edition, it used to say that the first 164 pages is the AA message. And it's the way of life described in the big book. Are you committed to living that way of life? So there's all kinds of things out there that I've heard over 9 years that are alluded to being the message. But the only message that's been shared with me is I need to live the way of life described in the book. And that's what my commitment is. And it involves a lot of discomfort and pain and suffering at times. But what else hones and polishes a person's character except those very things I just listed? So last night we talked about the basic text and AA recovery program and how we use that as a tool. We also talked about what it is we recover from, and we stressed the importance that the book does not say we recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind, body, and spirit. It just says mind and body. The spirit is something that constantly has to be addressed, and the process helps us cultivate a relationship with our inner spirit. We also talked about the arduous work in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous is one addict working with another or one alcoholic working with another. So those of you that are in the step process right now, you're not really in the work. You're doing the prep work to get ready for the real work, which is to carry this message. And this is our way of life. It's not a way to quit using. It's not a way to quit drinking. We covered that in those forward to the first edition and then forward to the second edition. We didn't do anything with the third and fourth editions. Why? Brandon pointed it out. Bill Wilson had passed away, so we're just not going to focus on that. I guess we're purists. Is that what we call each other? And then we went into the doctor's opinion, and we looked at four basic concepts out of the doctor's opinion. We looked at how the abnormal physical reaction that we have once we put drugs and alcohol in our system can explain things we could not otherwise account for. So I got free of a tremendous amount of guilt, shame, and remorse when I woke up to the idea that once I started, all bets were off. It made sense why I hurt all those people, why I missed all those engagements. I got free of the guilt and shame, and I stressed that you cannot share that with someone when you're in a ninth step amends. They don't want to hear that shit. They want to hear how you believe you harmed them. They want to talk about how it made them feel most of the time, and then you ask them that all-important question of what can I do to make things right. You don't tell them I have a physical craving, and that's why I did the things I did. It just doesn't work that way. It's not effective, but it's effective for the individual because there's so much guilt and shame inside of the addict. More so than other individuals, I'm willing to bet, because of the things we do to other people, and we actually believe we chose to do those things. If you truly understand the first step out of your own experience, you will see that you didn't choose to do those things. You could have done no different. So we talked about that passage. We talked about the phenomenon of craving and our problems becoming astonishingly difficult to solve. We lose our reliance upon things human, and we develop a habit that we find we cannot break over and over. And we looked at that as being our experience. We looked at the effect produced. We looked at the internal condition, the first time the book mentions it, restless, irritable, and discontent. We looked at the need to have a psychic change. And I believe the most important line out of the big book that we stressed last night, do you believe that if your ideals are grounded in a power greater than yourself, then you and God together can recreate your life? That I think that's an important question that has to be addressed very early on in this process. All right, so that brings us up to Bill's story and Mr. Brandon.
So I'm an alcoholic. My name is Brandon. A couple things. God, my mind's all over the place this morning. Alec, thank you so much for the prayer. I love the way that you address God. Like, hey, God. Like, guys, that's a prayer. A lot of my prayers sound like, what the hell are you doing, God? Like that's... I think that our society gets us in this state where we're so formal towards this formal God. God's not formal to us. Look at all the crazy stuff that happens around us. God's listening. What if every single one of your thoughts, every single one of them, was actually a prayer? Maybe you would be more motivated to clean up your thoughts. What if God can absolutely hear everything that you're thinking? I mean, why not? God created the universe. How's that not possible that he could hear your thoughts? Well, he's too busy. He doesn't have time for that. Really? He can make stars and planets and all this stuff and can't just intuitively listen to your thoughts? So something to ponder. I get these little bits of pieces of information that come into my life, and I'm a nerd and like them. And these stories, and so somebody shared with me the other day what a lobster experiences as it grows. And a lobster gets to a point where it's extremely uncomfortable in its shell. Its shell does not expand. So it has to crawl underneath a rock, shed its shell, and grow a new one.
goes along through life, keeps growing, gets uncomfortable in a shell, crawls underneath a rock, sheds the old one, grows a new one, continues this process for his entire life. So what that tells me is that all through nature, whenever I'm getting uncomfortable, it's a time for growth, and it's time for me to make a change. So all of you that are uncomfortable with the step process, wonderful. Welcome. There's a new life coming. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. A lot of people come into the fellowship and they get just enough and then they stop. And they go on and that's all they want out of life. And what we will consistently press over and over again this weekend is the fact that maybe there's more. This is one of my favorite readings. A lot of you have probably heard it or read it, but I think it sets the tone for what we're talking about here today. We buried him yesterday. The county coroner had published the required notices for the next of kin, and no one claimed the body. It was just myself and a sponsor, not even a preacher. The county doesn't pay for those. Not much of a send-off, not the one that David had asked for. A cheap coffin, a backhoe digging a hole, and that was it. Another old AA gone. He had been sober over 20 years, and in AA over 30. A stern and rigid man who had tried to soften his edges and never could. He was a loner, an isolated man at the edge of life's good things. He hung in there, and in the end, hung himself. I don't know why I can't know. I know there had been a diagnosis of senile dementia, and I know that the doctor had added cancer to the list. But I've seen AAs deal with such things before. I don't know why David decided he couldn't. It isn't the first time I've been through this in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've known several over the years who just up and walked out life's door one day. Sober, but not happy. Sober, but not at peace. Sober, but they died of alcoholism. Our disease does not need us to drink or drug in order to kill us. I wish more folks knew that and appreciated it. Alcoholism and drug addiction are the only diseases that are capable of fighting back and taking care of themselves and emerging in new places and new forms when it isn't properly treated. That's because of the spiritual malady. Most people think it has something to do with prayer or with God. It doesn't. It has to do with our spirit, that force which animates, motivates, and propels us. As an alcoholic or an addict, my spirit is flawed. It is ill. My character or basic nature doesn't work right. At its root is a fundamental and irresolvable insecurity, a hole that can't ever be filled. It is an instinct run rampant and in desperate need of acceptance and love that cannot be met. It hurts. It fills one with fear. The selfishness and self-centeredness of the alcoholic and addict lives here. We are totally preoccupied with what's going on with ourselves on the inside, maybe even right now, guys. The slings and arrows of experience warped by this need drives us to the fringe, and the voices of the committee in our heads keep us there. We are obsessed with ourselves, and from this condition of mind, the insanity of feeling gone haywire, we become self-medicators eventually. We discover alcohol or drugs or something else, and this quiets the voices and provides the relief we've never been able to find in any other way. It isn't any wonder we drink or drug the way we do. And some of us don't develop an addiction. In attempting to meet the crying demand of our spirit, we become ill. We develop other malformations of behavior and suffer in 100 different ways. God broke David's obsession to drink, but I don't think David ever truly understood his disease. I say that because I watched him struggle with those old, unresolved issues of his heart for years. His rigidity, coldness, aloofness, isolation, and difficulty with other people were a reflection of the pain in his heart, of the disease of alcoholism gone deep inside and still active. Alcoholism didn't need David to drink in order to kill him. And in the end, it succeeded. In the end, instead of self-abandon, David abandoned hope. and discovered a bitter end. Our recovery from alcoholism through the steps must be a threefold process. It is not one-dimensional. When we say in AA we have a triangle, recovery, unity, and service, we mean it. In working the steps, a clear pathway for two purposes. First, to come into a group of human people away from the fringe of society where I've spent most of my emotional life. Secondly, discovering belonging through service to people within that group. It is only this entire threefold process that heals. It is especially true for those who suffer from a spiritual malady to a great degree. Perhaps the 12th step says it best. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, recovery, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and addicts service and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Unity. You see, I cannot hold back. I must continue to suffer that shyness, aloneness, and overwhelming sense of self in my affairs. I must get involved in a group of people and practice these principles in all my affairs. Only the total approach is healing. Anything less is a little more than driving my disease deep. And if you do that, it will continue eating away, trying to destroy me. It destroyed David. This is a memorial to an old AA who gave it his best shot. And I think David ended up on the plus side. It wasn't his fault he seemed to have been born that way. There were a lot of old ideas about self that David could never muster the willingness to let go of. He is at rest now. But it says somewhere, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. David cannot speak to his experience any longer. I am speaking in his memory. And I think that if David could talk to us today, he'd say, understand your disease thoroughly and work the complete program of recovery. I mean, every time I read it, I can think of 10, 15, 20 people that are currently in my life that are experiencing everything that David's experiencing, and they're doing nothing about it. And it saddens me. It saddens me because I get to wake up most days with a sense of peace and ease and comfort, knowing that today is going to be wonderful. Not just thinking it, but knowing it. Because my experience abundantly confirms that if I actually do this thing, that my life just becomes so simple and easy. Do you want me to hit the first section? Then, all right. In our books, Bill Story.
I want to interject before you start. Okay. Just like last night. So we're going to give you guys a roadmap through the book. So Brandon's going to read a couple of paragraphs. You know, the purpose, one of the intents behind this weekend is to give you the guidelines as you take someone through the steps, so you have all the prompts in your book so you can have the conversations, because remember, the work you're doing is only the prep work. It's preparing you to do the real work, to take someone else through the process. Well, how do I do that? Yes, you can read the book line by line and swap experience and ask questions, and I'm all for that. But let's say you want to get through the process a little bit quicker. So we're not going to read the entire chapter of Bill's story, but we are going to hit on a few paragraphs. So I encourage you, highlight the paragraph. Brandon may allude to some considerations. Put them in your book. We're not going to stop and say, hey, write this down or do this. And then this weekend's being recorded. You can go back and listen to it. But the intent here is to put you guys in a position walking into sponsorship with a little bit of confidence here. That's what, if you're in a recovery program, if you're in a treatment program, your struggle with addiction has a purpose to it. It has a hidden, it's a hidden jewel. It really is. And once you tap into the meaning of your own personal jewel, you can take that out into the world, but you got to tap into it first and then take it to somebody else. And that's part of what we're doing this weekend. So that's it.
All right. So on page 4, well, first of all, Bill's story is kind of broken into two parts. It's the part of the drunk log, if you will, of all of the attempts that he made to quit and how nothing worked. And then in the middle of page 8, it kind of takes a shift. And it, on page 9, it takes you into what happened when he became sober, or when he was getting sober, the process of going through the steps. I like to encourage the people, because if this, again, we said it last night, but if this book does not if it does not become relevant to your experience, it's worthless. It's just a book. You've got to make this you. You've got to make this your experience. So I encourage the guys that I'm working with to go through and circle anything that they can relate to. Circle anything that they can say that their experience confirms with that. I mean, it's all through Bill's story. I was part of life at last. I fancied myself a leader. I imagined this would place me at the head of vast enterprises I would manage with utmost assurance. All these things, like this egoic mind that Bill does so well in explaining. The first couple pages, he talks about all these emotions. I was driven by my emotions in everything I did, and Bill captures that so wonderfully in the first couple pages. You don't have to raise your hand, but there are some of us that had the experience where we came up right at the edge of death, and we didn't die. My experience is one of I absolutely wanted to shoot myself in the face. I didn't, and I woke up the next day and something had shifted within me. If you've never gone right up to that edge of death, it's just a theory. If you have gone up to that edge of death and lived through it, something changes you. You experience it. So those of you that have gone up to the edge of death or have wanted to, that actually came within of doing it, you know what that's like. And so on page 4, in the middle of the page, Bill always capitalizes the things that are his that he considers gods, right? They're all through this book. Czar of the universe, creator of the heavens, all these things. In the middle of page 4, he refers to high finance with capital letters. That was his god. What was your god? What was the thing that you created in your life as the most important thing? But what's important to me in that paragraph is that it talks about these men, the papers reported men jumping to their death from the towers of high finance. That disgusted me. I would not jump. Bill's in judgment of all these people. Are you in judgment of the addicts and the alcoholics that go out and relapse? Page 5, the first paragraph. It talks about how liquor and or drugs cease to be a luxury. They become a necessity. The last sentence in that paragraph, nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. And there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. When you go through this book, if you're sitting there across from another guy, challenge them on this. Because a lot of people will have this experience where they were able to control their drugs and alcohol at some point in their sobriety, and therefore they believe that they can control their drugs and alcohol. Tell me what that looks like for you. Well, back when I was in college, I could get a bowl and I could drink a bottle and I would still make it to class. Okay, tell me what that was like for you at the end. Well, when I was back in college, I could smoke a bowl. No. What was it like at the end? Because this is a progressive illness. At the end, my ability to control or stop was none. My ability to not restart was none. A year prior to me smashing the wall, there were still opportunities where I could control it. So my mind takes me back to a year prior thinking, yeah, I probably can still do something about this. What's it really like at the end? Challenge that person that you're sitting across from. The third paragraph down, the first sentence, it says, I woke up, this had to be stopped. I saw that I could not take so much as one drink. Self-knowledge. Is that enough? Is just knowledge of your situation enough to get you to quit? Bill clearly saw it here, but he could not stop based on that knowledge alone. The last paragraph, first sentence, shortly after I came home drunk, there had been no fight. where had been my high resolve. I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Well, if there's a choice, if you really have a choice in this matter, why is he questioning it? Have you, in the end, did you question what was going on? That skip a sentence, it comes back, it goes back and it says, was I crazy? Have you thought that you were absolutely crazy doing the things that you were doing again and again and again? Maladjusted to life, lacking character? Are these the things that people told you? Did you start to believe them? Maybe I'm just nuts. Maybe I'm just nuts that I know that if I walk into this place and have a couple drinks, that I'm going to end up at the club and I'm going to blow money I don't have, and then I'm going to spend the next 2 months going to the mail before my wife to make sure that I get all the statements for the bank thing so that she doesn't see where I actually spent the money. Good God, if they had internet banking back when I was actually tearing it up, I would have been busted way sooner than I was. Because she could just go online and check that stuff. Wow. It must be harder nowadays to hide that shit. So, page six. What a powerful paragraph. The first full paragraph. The remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. The courage to do battle was not there. My brain raced uncontrollably, and there was a terrible sense of impending calamity. I hardly dare cross the street, lest I collapse and be run down by an early morning truck, for it was scarcely daylight. An all-night place supplied me with a dozen glasses of ale. My withering nerves were stilled at last. A morning paper told me the market had gone to hell again. Well, so had I. The market would recover, but I wouldn't. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? No, not now. Then a mental fog settled down. Gin or a stem or whatever it is for you would fix that. So two bottles and oblivion. So, I read this paragraph and I can remember those mornings. I can remember those mornings. Ah, forget the mental, or forget the physical. The mental anguish of that next morning. You would think that that would be enough, right? A normal person has that happen to them. That's enough. Not me. And I'm starting to realize that I cannot live life, so I'm starting to consider the ultimate sacrifice of suicide, right? Thinking about it more. Well, 2 pages ago, Bill was like, those guys are losers that are jumping. Now he's considering it. It's opening up the possibility. The next paragraph after that, in the middle of it, is, again, I swayed dizzily before an open window or the medicine cabinet where there was poison, cursing myself a weakling. So 2 pages ago, those people were losers. A paragraph ago, he started considering it. Now he's sitting there thinking, why can't I do it? Because life has become so unbearable, so difficult, that I cannot continue to go on living. How many times have you gotten to that place where you just knew that you couldn't go on living that way? Page 7, the second full paragraph, the last sentence. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. What is a trigger list? What is a relapse prevention program? Self-knowledge. Self-knowledge isn't working for me. Probably doesn't work for you. Go through. This is usually where I ask the guy that I'm taking through the steps. Let's talk about all the ways that you tried to quit. I had a guy. This is how I know God works in my life. A guy finally gets into treatment to dry out, and he calls me and he says, I did my homework. I said, oh, good. What was your homework? He's like, well, I wrote all the ways that I tried to quit drinking. I was like, well, how many did you come up with? He goes, I came up with 30. And I said, okay, so you tried to quit drinking 30 times. He goes, no. I tried 30 different ways to quit drinking. I tried several of those multiple times. And here's how I know God's working in my life. It's because I'm listening to this exercise going, damn, that is a really good exercise. And I was like, so are you doing that as like one as part of one of your classes? And he goes, no, you told me to do it. And I'm like, you sure? And then he describes to me the experience of all the things we were talking about when I gave him that exercise. And I remember the conversation, but I do not remember asking him for this. So God sometimes sneaks in a couple words that I don't even know that are going on, and it actually benefits somebody. And then I get to share it with you. It's kind of weird. So again, at the bottom of the page, he's in there. He's talking with his wife. The second sentence of that last paragraph, it says, they did not need to tell me about the fact that he was going to have to be given over to the undertaker. I almost knew and welcomed the idea. Now he's praying for death. Now he doesn't want to do it anymore. He doesn't want to be here anymore. He doesn't want to exist anymore. Sometimes when a person's faced with the possibility of alcoholic or addict destruction or spiritual help, they look like the same thing. And if a person is in that place, it's very difficult to work with them because they may have gotten to the point where they're so ready for death that they don't even care if they get sober anymore. And if you reach one of those guys, unfortunately, there's nothing you can do for them. You can try. I'm not saying to kick them to the curb, but generally, at some point in time, when I'm sitting down from a guy, I ask him, do you actually want to live? I get the answer back a lot. I do, but not the way that I've been living. Cool, we can work with that. But if you tell me straight out, I don't want to live anymore, it might be a wasted effort. Page 8, we don't have a number on that one, but trembling?
Mm-hmm. No words.
Oh, okay. So the first full paragraph on page 8. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in the bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol, crack, crystal meth was my master. Peter did a wonderful job last night of talking about the mastery that drugs had over his life. It told him to go where it wanted him to go, told him what money to spend, it told him which moral character things that he could push to the side. It told him all those things. Look up the definition of master. In order for there to be a master, there has to be a subject that is mastered. And I was the subject that was mastered. Alcohol dictated everything in my life. I had no choice. I was driven by alcohol. No idea that this was going on, but that is what was going on. The next paragraph, again, trembling, I stepped from the hospital, a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. My brush with suicide sobered me up for 4 days. That's it. Wanted to die. No desire to live. Woke up the next day. What the hell was that? Man, I have got to stop drinking. 4 days later, I'm probably overreacted. Back at it. Back at it for 2 weeks until the rest of the stuff that came falling down. In the middle of this paragraph, a shift happens. How dark it was before the dawn. Right in the middle of this paragraph is where a little glimmer of hope comes into Bill's life. And from here, he starts into the recovery process.
How dark it is before the dawn. I was thinking about the lobster. you know, that space where the lobster is actually crawling underneath the rock and beginning to shed its shell, it's very indicative of our experience in the darkness before we emerge into the light. Mm. As I was brought to my turning point in November of 2007, I literally thought, there was a part of me, and I'm sure some of you in this room have this thought life right now, that you are entering the dark part of your life. But the opposite is happening. You're actually transitioning from the dark into the light, if you're willing to make a commitment. That's the linchpin. Are you willing to make the commitment? Because what happens to Bill is his progression takes him to a place of surrender. And the surrender, I want to touch on page 12 real quick. So, the surrender, and you guys who know me have heard me talk about this. You can sit down with your sponsor and you can listen to Brandon and I this weekend, and we're going to intellectually, as well as experientially, take you through the powerlessness piece of your first step, and then the unmanageability. In the powerlessness, we look at the physical and the mental, but there is a part of your first step that can't be worked. And that's what Bill just spent those 8 pages talking about. He described all of his life circumstances and the progression of his drinking emotionally, physically, mentally, and then even spiritually, and it brought him to his knees, and he stood in the dark, and he stood at his turning point, and he made a commitment without even really knowing he'd made a commitment. And that's surrender. Surrender can't be worked. You can't work a surrender. Okay? No one that's in a war or in a battle, they're forced to surrender. They're forced into a position where they have to surrender, and they lay down their weapons, and we're done. So, Evie comes in on page 8, and him and Bill start talking about God. They go back and forth, and then the true divinity of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is presented. And the reason I call it divinity, because I have a very difficult time thinking that the Oxford group, which was at one point called the first century Christianity, and then they were very Christian in their approach, and the Oxford groups didn't shy away from that. Now, Ebby's sitting in this meeting, one of multiple meetings with Bill Wilson, and he throws his hands up and says, "Bill, I don't really care. Why don't you just make up your own God?" I think that was like one of the Brandon's description of him giving that guy the assignment and not being aware of it. I think that's what happened to Ebby. But you and I, all of us are sitting here this Saturday morning because those words came out of Ebby's mouth and Bill had. You cannot argue with that. When somebody says make up your own conception of God, how do you argue? You cannot argue. That's the beauty of it, the simplicity of it. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? The statement hit Bill hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain whose shadow he had lived and shivered many years. He stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required for me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. So I think back to that day in the courtroom. When I get brought into the courtroom, my parents were not communicating with me. They completely turned their backs on me. I'm looking at these two Schedule I felonies. They drag me into this courtroom. I'm shackled to all these grown men. A buddy of mine had gotten me an attorney. I start talking to the attorney. Have you seen my mom? And I can remember it to this day like it's happening right now. I turn and I look at my mother, and she's completely ghost white. She hasn't eaten probably the entire time I've been incarcerated. And she looks like she's very frail and she's about to fall apart. And I did that. I did that. And something in me just absolutely broke. I was split wide open. And in that moment, I was surrendered. Pay close to attention to the way I just phrased that. I was surrendered. I didn't surrender on my own. The circumstances made me willing. I was surrendered by a loving God. And that was my turning point. And I pray to God each of you can dig into your experience and perhaps find something like that. But I no longer wanted to be capable of doing that to other people. It was my existence that had that type of effect on somebody. And I know my mom has her own responsibility in that at some level. But that's what we do. When the book says we're tornado roaring through the lives of others, that's what they're describing. And so for me, that's where my complete willingness came from. That foundation of my first step, before ever having worked a step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that time, was worked. It was solidified. The foundation was rock solid. I became willing to do whatever I had to do to never do that to somebody, to not die living that way. It was my progression towards death that had decimated my family. My progression towards death.
There, you'll hear so many people say that Alcoholics Anonymous got me sober. What he just described is Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous did not get him sober. God got him sober. Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous showed him a pathway to stay sober. I was forced into sobriety. I was thrust there. I was dry for at least 2 weeks before I attended my first meeting. Alcoholics Anonymous did not get me sober. God got me sober. I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous sober. The steps took me through the process to allow me to afford a lifetime of sobriety.
And Brandon and I share that common experience where we were delivered to Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous because I got clean 5 weeks before I entered a meeting. So AA and CA did not get me sober like Brandon. God delivered me to AA. He delivered me to you. That's what happened. And I want to wrap this up real quick. Bill goes through the step process, and I'm not going to sit here and go through all of that, but I encourage you to put some highlights, because when you take someone through the process, the exercise in Bill's story, the first 8 pages, how did I feel like Bill, drink like Bill? If Bill's talking about drinking, did you use drugs the same way he drank? And did you ever feel like Bill? The second 8 pages is what Bill did. He talks about God with Evie, and then he talks about the recovery process. Does any of that create some resistance in you? It's okay if it does, because it's interesting to read that at the beginning of the work and then go back when you start making amends and read those pages again, and how has it changed for you? And so the paragraph I want to spend time reading is on page 14. Simple but not easy. A price has to be paid. It means destruction of self-centeredness. Self-centeredness doesn't mean you think too much of yourself or too low of yourself. You think about yourself too damn often. You are on you. That's what it means. I must turn in all things to the Father of life who presides over us all. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. When I fully accepted the commitment outlined in this book, I knew my drug problem had been solved. I still hadn't worked any steps, but I was in jail knowing what meeting I was going back to in Sandy Springs, knowing the guys I was going to go ask to help me. I knew my problem had been solved. And I believe, and some people may disagree with me, if you are committed to this process, I don't care where you are in the step work, you're safe and protected. If you're committed. It's when you're not committed to this process and you're committed to the girl or the guy or the job or the money or the family or the kids, all that shit. You become committed to that first, you're no longer safe and protected. It's a crapshoot at that point. All I know is my recovery was more important to me than anything. Family, job, I didn't give a shit. It was the most important thing in my life, and it stays the most important thing in my life.
And for me, it was funny because through a strange set of circumstances all at once, I had nothing now. She had kicked me out. Kids were gone. House was gone. Car was gone. Job was gone. I had all the time in the world to do this. It wasn't that recovery was the most important thing for me. It was all I had. There was nothing else out there for me.
There. Okay, so if you're in this process or you've been through this process, this is a checklist. all of these must happen. Now, what happened to Bill is they all took place at the same time, so he has his white light experience. I've experienced every single one of these. So ask yourself this question. Have I had a sense of victory since I've been here? Have you had such a peace and serenity? It was greater than any peace and serenity you'd ever known. Have you felt utter confidence? Have you felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through? Has God come to you? Has his impact on you been sudden and profound at times? I think these are requirements, that these have to happen.
That's the second full paragraph on page 14.
For a moment, I was alarmed and called my friend, the doctor, to see if I were still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, he shook his head, saying, "Something has happened to you I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were." The good doctor now sees many men who've had such experiences. He knows that they are real. So Bill lays in the hospital, and an idea comes to mind that other alcoholics would want what he had just been so freely given. So the idea of the 12th step is born. And so this is so far this weekend, you've probably heard me say more than one time that the work in the 12 steps that you're individually doing is not the work in Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous. It's the prep work. Well, where does Tarek get an idea like that? I'm going to show you. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs, particularly as it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works is dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the addict and the alcoholic. So here it is. If an addict and alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he will not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he does not work, he will surely drink or get high again. And if he drinks or gets high again, he will surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed, and with us it is just like that. So the Bill just tells us that the real work involves self-sacrifice for others. When I sit down and set aside my time to work and take somebody through the steps, it is a sacrifice. I have a family, I have a wife, I have a daughter. It is a sacrifice for me to set aside time and work with others. But it's also the bright spot of my life. I am addicted to watching another person wake up. Here and there, once in a while, addicts and alcoholics have what are called vital spiritual experiences. And when I am a part of it, I grow spiritually. I grow more spiritually when I'm engaged in that process than I do when I'm working the steps. What the steps do is they make me a hollow bone so I can be an effective sponsor. That's why I rework the steps every year, to be a better sponsor. That's ultimately the purpose of all of this, is to put myself in that position. And I think it's vitally important that we understand that, because I watch people go back into the steps because they want to work on themselves, because they want to feel better, because they want to manage their lives. They want to change the appearance of their lives, both externally and internally. The idea that this process is honing and polishing my character so I can bring that back into the step work and then take that to somebody else isn't really the central point. It's about, I need to make my life better. That's why I need to go back through the steps. So I think that's a good stopping point. Brandon, you want to say anything? All right, we're going to take a break for 15 minutes.